Today on And Another Things Roundtable, we are joined by Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP and the news director of Holyoke Media, as well as Dr. Armando Paez, the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases here at Bay State Medical Center.
And Walter Smith Randolph, investigative editor and lead reporter for the Accountability Project at Connecticut Public for Connecticut PBS and NPR stations. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this roundtable. Since we have the doctor here, let's start with an ongoing story.
Dr. Paez, reports in the news this week suggest that COVID numbers are receding. Can we be optimistic about this, or are we still in for the long haul?
Well, the numbers of cases of COVID-19, they're coming down, but very slowly. It's still out there in the community. So in that case, it's still out there. So if you haven't been vaccinated, I really encourage you to get vaccinated and follow the rules of infection control. If you're going to be in the indoor public setting, that you should wear a mask or any crowded setting for that matter.
What's the status of booster shots right now?
The booster shot, or they call it the third shot, depending on which vaccine we're talking about here. There are three authorized vaccines. Our available vaccine, the Pfizer, Moderna, and the J&J. So the booster shot is meant to increase or augment the immunity that's already been developed after the primary series of vaccination. And booster shot was first authorized to be used in immunocompromised, moderately immunocompromised individuals. Those are the individuals, for example, who had taking medications that make their immune system weak, transplant patients, any medications that can actually prevent the immune system to react to infection.
Doctor, when they talk about the boosters, there seems to be symptoms that are affecting women that are coming back from some of these trials. What are those, and should we be concerned? Swollen lymph nodes that have come back. Women have concerns about these symptoms they're having.
Yeah, so we call that lymphadenopathy. It's something that's reported in any vaccine that's authorized because the lymph nodes basically contain your cells that actually react to the antigen from the vaccine, and that's the one that's helps in mounting an immune response to get the immunity that you need. And so it's not unusual to have some pain in the armpit where the lymph nodes live, and that's where are found, and that's where people complain about. But most common side effects, even for booster shots, is just a pain in the site of infection and fatigue. Those are the two common side effects. And again, this is not what you're asking, particularly in women. It's really across the board.
As we now we hear about the Pfizer, kids 5 through 12, I believe, now is what's next on the list. And because we do have such a diverse audience, I don't want to exclude people with this information. If there's anything that you can also say in Spanish to our audience, because we have such a great listenership that speaks Spanish, to let them know about the kids, what's next for kids, these young school age kids.
Yes. So right now, the Pfizer BioNTech has asked the FDA or has submitted the application for authorization of these vaccines for children age 5 to 11 years old. As you know, this vaccine has been authorized already for ages 12 to 15. And when it first rolled out from 16 years old and older, that was first authorized for use. So this is a welcoming, news. It's very positive because we really need this, especially that with the coming months where a lot of indoor activities for the kids and a lot of during the holiday season. I think it's very important to protect this group of people because they are not vaccinated. It's one of those group of individuals that we really need to vaccinate.
Anything in Espanol?
Maybe Natalia can help me.
If the message is that's important that people get vaccinated, then the simplest way of saying is vacúnense. no le tengan miedo a la vacuna.
Yes, absolutely. This is something that is very important because in kids, although they may not get very, very sick, they can still get sick and transmit it to the other people in the household. And if a child is with a grandma who's, you know, diabetes and have other medical conditions, you know, that will predispose for severe infection. That's really one way to look at it, to get vaccinated in addition to a personal protection.
People are fearful about, they're still fearful about la vacuna, okay. The vaccine. What do you say to people who have legitimate fears about it?
Yes, yes. I think you should remember that we are already more than a year in a pandemic and the vaccine has been used in millions and millions of people. And this has been proven to be safe and effective. And I should say that we are already talking about the booster shot, right? I mean, people are lining up, and I think it's very important to remember that we do have good data to support its really its safety and its effectiveness.
Bueno, para la gente que aún tenga duda, lo importante, según el doctor Armando Páez, es, pues miren, millones y millones de personas se han vacunado ya. Y eso es lo que ha ayudado a bajar la incidencia de personas que se han enfermado por el COVID o por el Delta. Así que siempre volvemos a lo mismo. Hay que vacunarse.
Dr. Paez, thank you for joining us on this topic. We want to keep you around because when we start talking about the marathons later, we really want to know, is this safe to do? So thank you. Let's get started with our other two journalists here. Walter Smith Randolph from Connecticut Public. Thank you for being with us. Tell us what is happening in that investigative unit that us journalists need to know you're working on.
Sure. We're working on a few stories. We have a series that's going to debut in a few weeks about juvenile justice in Connecticut. And in one particular case in New Britain, a teenager stole a car and then he mowed down a runner. And so a lot of politicians have used that to say we need tougher juvenile justice laws. They've also talked about the police accountability law that went into effect in Connecticut. So some state Republicans are calling for a special session to take a look at those police accountability laws again. But we're taking a deeper dive into to the numbers and to what actually happened. So in the case of New Britain jogger, yes, the teenager, you know, allegedly did mow down the runner. But what a lot of people haven't covered on that story is that the teen driver was being chased by somebody else. And that person had called 911 and that person was chasing the teenager for 11 miles. And 911, the dispatcher told him to stop chasing him. And so the question becomes, you know, yes, the teenager, you know, who allegedly stole the car, he probably shouldn't have stolen the car, but would that runner have died if the other person wasn't chasing him? And so we're also taking a look at the numbers of stolen cars and juvenile crimes. And so, yes, there's been a spike, an uptick in crime. I think we're seeing that across the country. We see it in Connecticut, but it is a spike. It's not, you know, it's not a three-year trend that you're seeing up. Crime has gone down. And so even though it spiked up a little bit, it's not back into the highs of crime that we saw back in the 1990s. So we're looking at that data over a 30-year trend. Another story we're working on that we have today that's going to be on, WNPR, Connecticut Public Radio, is about the vaccine mandate for state workers. We just got data released by the governor's office that breaks down, you know, according to agency, how many state workers are vaccinated, how many are undergoing weekly testing, and how many people are just non-compliant who haven't reported anything. And so we got some of the numbers. So yesterday we saw that 98% of workers who work for the Workers' Compensation Bureau are vaccinated. We know that one of the lowest rates of vaccination for state workers, or state agencies, I should say, is the Department of Education in Connecticut, as well as the Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections is around 54-55%. And so they're going to have to undergo weekly testing. The state is still negotiating with different unions about who's going to actually pay for that, because the state has said that they will pay for 4 of those COVID tests for the people who are choosing to do weekly testing, but then it becomes, well, who's going to pay for the rest of it? We also got the contract to see how they're monitoring it. They're using an app that people have to upload their results to or their vaccination proof. And that's going to cost the state about $150,000 per month to monitor that as well. So those are just some of the stories that we're looking at right now.
Walter, we also know that the governor's office has a recent survey of air quality in schools. Have you heard anything about that? Are you pressing them to release those results?
Yeah, so we did the story about that a few weeks ago, and then the state Senate Republican leader, they sent a letter to the governor asking him for saying, you know, please release these results. And they kept saying, oh, we're working on a final report. We're expecting to see which HVAC, which HVAC and ventilation systems need to be replaced. A lot of these HVAC systems are, you know, they have a 30-year span, and so they've reached the end of their life. And so they need to be replaced. But then the question becomes, who's going to replace them? Some teachers were complaining about the air quality. It was making them sick, but there was no way to report it. There are no standards really within schools. And air quality and ventilation is very important, obviously, when it comes to COVID-19.
Right. Because, doctor, isn't that part of the problem, the recirculation of air? Right. Airplanes, we're talking about replacing it, corporations, buildings, offices, replacing that HVAC system. So if in the schools they aren't replaced, then our kids will be at risk to suffer more.
Yeah, I mean, those are mitigation tools. And we know that, and even CDC has a guidance on the ventilation system that can help prevent the spread of the infection. So I think we should use all the tools we have in order to help prevent the spread of this infection, particularly again in individuals who have not been vaccinated in those large groups of individuals.
Coming up.
Look, I'm just talking to you as a Puerto Rican woman, huh? This whole thing of, you know, this woman, a white woman, created a painting and said, they're indigenous ghosts in the painting.
More with our journalist roundtable after the break here on And Another Thing. Stay with us.
You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. With Derek Kennedy, I'm Maya Schwader. We continue our week in review with regional journalists and their take on the stories in this week's news.
Natalia, can we turn to you now and talk about the stories that you are working on? The Northampton Arts Council. They canceled their art show, right?
Yes, the Northampton Arts Council canceled an art show. And I think what they also canceled were themselves as responsible overseers of the cultural life in the city of Northampton. And this all started because somebody who wanted to have his work be in the show, in the biennial, his work was not accepted. He's a very good artist, but his work was not accepted. And it seems like what happened is, look, I'm just talking to you as a Puerto Rican woman, huh? This whole thing of, you know, this woman, a white woman, created a painting and said they're indigenous ghosts in the painting. And so this person who complained, which caused the wusses at the Northampton Arts Council to cancel the show, he said, no, you can't make ghosts of indigenous people because we're still here. We haven't disappeared. And it's just, why did the Northampton Arts Council listen to one person? And based on that one person, they retreated, completely retreated. I think these are kind of like the nice racists, you know? It's like, oh my God, did we offend a Chicano? No, let's cancel the show. Mira, you can offend me as a Puerto Rican. You have an art show, that's okay. It's an art show, it's art. It's not art according to me, it's art according to the artist.
I can hear that you're extremely passionate about this. I think this goes to a really deep and necessary conversation that's being held in a lot of parts of the arts community these days about what representation is, who is allowed to represent themselves, in what way people should be representing each other. It's a really complex topic. And Natalia, as a Puerto Rican woman, tell us how you feel about that.
Okay. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. that the Northampton Arts Council canceled this exhibit. I also don't, I have a different view. I don't know that people are allowed or not allowed to create a artwork that speaks to their own experiences or other people's experiences. The art world is basically one of the few places where you can create something and you don't need a license to do it. You don't have to prove your ability to be creative. But I don't think that that should include that one person can derail an exhibit. And also the way that he referred to the woman who created the artwork as an old white woman. You know, I just think here's a secret I'm going to tell white people. Okay, for all the Anglos out there, there's not one of us in the Latino, Latinx, however you want to call us, community that holds the answer to everything. And so to then, you know, anoint this person who complained as having a powerful voice being representative of nothing. He's being representative of his own disappointment or frustration that his work is not in the show, maybe. Maybe it's that, yeah, he's just genuinely offended. But that doesn't mean that the biennial exhibit needs to be canceled. And that's how I feel. I feel that we cannot walk on rice paper when it comes to creativity.
What was the civic response to this? How did the community feel about this cancellation?
Oh, my goodness. You know, if you just look at the newspaper, the Gazette, it's just full of letters to the editor, all of them criticizing the decision of the Northampton Arts Council. And, you know, basically the artist who was rejected from having his work in the show, there's a general agreement from people who don't even know each other that we all feel, yes, complain, that's fine. Yeah, you're unhappy? Okay. That's not the point. The point is now all of us don't have access to see these artworks and have our own opinions.
And we all know it's about access. We've learned, I think, over the course of the pandemic, the haves and the have-nots, the importance of having access. And to your point, speaking of, you know, Indigenous Day is on Monday, and Boston decided to have their marathon run on that day. They have since, the city of Boston has since sent out an apology saying that they completely didn't recognize that the Indigenous Day was being celebrated on that day. The Eversource Hartford Marathon is taking place on Saturday. The Chicago Marathon is taking place on Saturday, but Boston chose to do it on Indigenous Day. What does that say about them? Are they out of touch, or did they really just, oops?
And they didn't look at a calendar.
Yeah, I think it's an oops. I just think that there was nothing intentional about trying to, again, offend anybody. It was just they didn't look at the calendar. And it's true. I think that as different communities are adapting Indigenous Day replacing Indigenous People's Day and not celebrating Columbus anymore, it's confusing.
So, Doctor, as the Boston Marathoners get ready to run on Monday and the Eversource Hartford Marathon takes place on Saturday, is this safe? Thousands and thousands and thousands of people sweating and running and laughing and crying together for 26 and a half miles. Is it safe? Even the people doing a half marathon. Anybody running more than two people in a group, is it safe?
Please give us an excuse to not run a marathon.
No, as you know, it's an outdoor activity. That's one. But even an outdoor activity, if it's really crowded, meaning to say you're really close to each other within 6 feet, and especially if you've not been vaccinated, you should really wear a mask. But obviously with this physical activity, it's not something that you're really not gonna do. But even for spectators who are, you know, in watching and in crowded settings, that's not something that I would recommend unless you really wear a mask.
I have one more question for Natalia. What kind of cultural shift do we think this signals, the fact that it was Columbus Day and now more and more towns are adopting Indigenous Peoples Day as the name of the holiday?
Yeah, there is a cultural shift happening across the country. And there's some communities that say, no, we don't want to change the name to Indigenous Peoples Name. And there's also, I think part of the conversation that people are having and people are grappling with is that, okay, to change the name from Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, when we have a holiday, it's just like when there's a statue, like the Robert E. Lee statue that was finally brought down, they hold places of such significance in a community. And in the same way, the days that we have off, or the days we commemorate or celebrate, they have an importance in our community. And so, yeah, we're going through it. There's a lot of controversy. That's what happens in a democracy. People agree, disagree for different reasons. And, you know, some people think the reasons are fantastic. Others think, no, that's a dumb reason. But this is the conversation that always has to happen in democracy. And there is a cultural shift. And in just the same way that the Webster Dictionary every year adds some few, you know, some new words, because there's a, we are evolving in our, the use of our language. The same thing. I think the same rules apply then for creativity.
A big story this week was the Facebook outage. Monday's outage sent the world into a panic. Billions of products, including WhatsApp, Instagram, Messenger, they stopped working for nearly 7 hours. We've since received an apology from Zuckerberg and the engineers. Here's a two-part question. Did you miss not being able to get on social media? And is this the beginning of the end for Facebook?
Oh, that it, Dara, that it be the end of Facebook. I did not miss it for a nanosecond. I did miss WhatsApp, because that's how I communicate with my peeps in Puerto Rico and other places overseas. And, you know, Zuckerberg is always apologizing. I mean, he's made apologizing a cottage industry. It's like, when he fills out his IRS form, he can just say, apologizer in chief at Facebook. Remember before Facebook? Remember how we used to just call each other? Or we'd send an email? There is a value for certainly for have websites where everybody can get together and share opinions. But the way Facebook is mining our personal info and selling it, that I think is what's so reprehensible. And so when they went out for a few hours, I was very happy.
Natalia Munoz, the director of Holyoke Media, Walter Smith Randolph, investigative editor and lead reporter for the Accountability Project at Connecticut Public Broadcasting, and Dr. Armando Paez of Bay State Health. Thank you all for your time today and for joining us on And Another Things Week in Review Roundtable. Natalia Munoz, the director of Holyoke Media, Walter Smith Randolph, investigative editor and lead reporter for the Accountability Project at Connecticut Public Broadcasting, and Dr. Armando Paez of Bay State Health. Thank you all for your time today and for joining us on And Another Things Week in Review Roundtable.
Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing. Be sure to tune in next week for more in-depth discussions on the local take on the news. Have a great weekend. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. Be sure to connect with us across social media at AAT on NEPM or email us at andanotherthing@nepm.org. Thanks for listening.